Open Floor is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code OPENFLOOR for $20 off your first purchase. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in the one-week fantasy sports with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code OPENFLOOR at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. Watching them play early in the season, they could be, like, maybe historically bad this year.
Yeah, they're brutal, and they're also boring, Chris. I mean, and that's, you know, going into this season, a lot of people said, well, they'll be intriguing. It's Kobe. It could be Kobe Bryant's last year. You know, I don't really find that story very intriguing. I find it kind of depressing. It's just sort of a question of, is he going to stay upright? You know, how much heat is he going to take for, you know, launching too many shots? I don't really see a whole lot of intrigue with this team beyond the same intrigue they've had for the last couple of years, which is, will they keep that pick or not? Or will they have to send it to Philadelphia?
Hey, welcome back. It's the third edition, episode 3 of Open Floor, SI.com's NBA podcast. 3 down, hopefully 300 plus or more to go. Glad you could be here, and it's a busy podcast. I'm looking forward to this. You know it's a busy podcast when I tell you that I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking at the beginning, because we've got Al Jefferson, the outstanding power forward slash center for the Charlotte Hornets. He's going to join us in the second segment. And then Lee Jenkins, my colleague over at Sports Illustrated, covers the NBA, lives out in Los Angeles, has a pretty keen viewpoint on the issues plaguing the Lakers, on what we're seeing from the Clippers. So we're going to talk to Lee in the third segment of this podcast as well. So a lot to get to, but before we get to any of the guests of the program, I want to tell you what I have seen. And to borrow from Peter King, my colleague here, I'm going to tell you 3 things that I like and 3 things that I don't like from the first week of the regular season. And we'll start with the positive, because we're all about the positive here on the Open Floor podcast. First thing I like is I like the Detroit Pistons. I like what I'm seeing out of Stan Van Gundy's team. Now, this team, I thought, took a big risk at the end of last year and in the offseason when they basically decided they were going to let Greg Monroe, one of the better young bigs in the NBA, just walk away. Now, you see guys get traded all the time. Generally, you don't see a player with the talent of Greg Monroe just be allowed to go to another team without much of a fight. But that's what the Pistons did, because they believe that they're better suited with somebody else at power forward alongside Andre Drummond. And early on, it looks like Stan Van Gundy was right. Detroit's beaten Chicago, Atlanta, and Utah in the first week of the season. That's 2 playoff teams and 1, you know, wannabe playoff team. Andre Drummond, we keep saying, pump the brakes on Andre Drummond. He's not Dwight Howard. He's playing like Dwight Howard. This guy is a defensive monster, a rebounding monster, who gets a little bit better offensively, it seems like, every single year. That's the last part of his development, offense. Defense and rebounding, he has been great for most of his young career, and this year is no different. Marcus Morris, who was an absolute steal for this team in the offseason, looks like a much better fit than Monroe was alongside Drummond. He's 4 of 7 from 3-point range. He's putting up numbers from all over the floor. He's a more athletic player, can be more perimeter-oriented, and still score in the post when he's asked to. Stanley Johnson, Pistons love Stanley Johnson coming into the draft. They were ecstatic that Stanley Johnson fell to them in the top 10 in the draft. He has played well. He's given them something. Now, the funny thing about Detroit is that they've been off to this good start, and their offense has been terrible. It's been lousy. It's a middle-of-the-pack offense in terms of efficiency. It's lousy in shooting percentage. But this is a team that it's making its bones on defense. They've got a great anchor in Andre Drummond. They play solid team defense. And when that offense starts to get better, I think the Pistons are going to start to get better too. And that's a scary thought for teams that might have thought Detroit was not in the running for that 8th and final playoff spot, maybe the 7th spot in the Eastern Conference. Second thing I like Oklahoma City. Kevin Durant, fully healthy. Kevin Durant, he's starting to get pissed off that people keep asking him about his foot. I saw him say just the other day when asked about this upcoming 4-game in 5-night stretch for Oklahoma City, he's like, you know, I'm not a 19-year veteran, guys. I'm still a young guy. I did miss a large chunk of last season, but I'm fine. And that's the attitude you love to hear from Kevin Durant, because Billy Donovan, he has no intention of sitting Kevin Durant down, taking any kind of precautionary steps at this point with Kevin Durant. He is saying, KD, you tell me if you're hurt, but if you're healthy, you go out there and you play. And watching this team, the offensive explosiveness of Oklahoma City is incredible. I mean, Russell Westbrook, he's picked up right where he left off. Durant, he's getting right back into what he was a couple of years ago. I like how Billy Donovan is mixing and matching his front line sometimes, and maybe more so than last year. You're seeing Durant play the power forward spot. That gives Donovan the option of playing Serge Ibaka, Steven Adams, or Enes Kanter at that five spot alongside Durant. That makes them more athletic. It makes them tougher to match up with. I got to tell you, watching Oklahoma City, I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses there, and it really reinforces to me why I thought they'd be the team that will come out of the Western Conference. Third thing I like what I see out of Toronto. Now, the Raptors, I am going to take credit for being ahead of the bandwagon here, because the Raptors, I picked them to finish second in the Eastern Conference this year, right behind Cleveland. I thought the defense would come around. I love Damari Carroll. The offense was efficient last year, and I think there'd be a greater emphasis this year on ball movement, and we're seeing a lot of those things come to fruition. Damari Carroll has been as advertised for Toronto. They've run him out there, played him 35, 40 minutes, deployed him as a defensive weapon. He has been able to take over parts of these early games with his defense and with his ability to make shots a little bit from the outside, but mostly with the defense. That's what he's been known for. That's what he's delivering to Dwayne Casey and the Toronto Raptors. And if you look at the schedule, the Raptors, they've got this brutal road-heavy month of November. If they can just get through this month, they can really put together a nice run and build a lot of confidence in a young team. I'm a big fan of Dwayne Casey as a head coach. I think he's underrated. I think it's ridiculous how every year it seems like people are wondering if he's on the hot seat. Should he be fired? 2 years ago, he had this team in a great position, a young team in a great position. Took a step back last year, but this year I think you're seeing more of the norm. And credit Masai Ujiri for adding the pieces to the roster that have really helped Dwayne Casey play his style. All right, things I don't like. I don't like what I've seen out of Houston so far. The Rockets have been getting pummeled at home. The defense has been awful. The effort isn't there. They're not gambling as much as they used to defensively last season. This team has the potential to be a great transition defensive team. Look at all the guys they've got. Ty Lawson, Patrick Beverley, James Harden, bigs that run the floor. You'd like to see Houston gamble more defensively, but it just seems like they're running in quicksand right now. That's led to some bad losses, giving up 100-plus points routinely. This defense has to come around. I think it starts with James Harden because he's the leader. Now, Harden might be going through some stuff right now because offensively, he hasn't been the same player early on this season. But he's got to understand, that offense for James Harden, that's going to come around. He is going to be the same dynamic offensive player at some point this season. Defensively, he's got to do what he did last year. He has to keep giving that consistent effort every single night, because the rest of the Rockets, they look at him, they feed off him, and they need him to be that leader and that star player for them. Second thing I don't like, Indiana. The Pacers, that new small ball lineup. When you think of the Pacers the last few years, you think big, physical, and a little mean, frankly, with David West and Roy Hibbert and some of the physical guys they've been able to roll out there. This Pacer team, they've got a talented guy in Paul George. It's great to see him fully healthy, but I just don't think they have the personnel to play this small ball lineup as consistently as Frank Vogel might like. Jan Mahimi, he's okay. CJ Miles, he's okay. Monte Ellis, he's okay. George Hill, he's okay. Look, it's just not a dynamic roster. It's not the type of roster like, say, New Orleans or Milwaukee or one of these groups that's kind of built to play small ball because they have dynamic athletes in the backcourt. Paul George, he's a dynamic athlete. Monte Ellis, he's a dynamic athlete. But these other guys, you don't see up-tempo. You don't see fast. You don't see that type of athleticism in them. That's why I think the Pacers, you know, you can keep trying this and keep seeing if you can play smaller, if it's going to work. But at some point, if they continue to struggle, Frank Vogel is going to have to start thinking about playing more conventional lineups more often. I watched a lot of the Jazz game. And against the Jazz, the Pacers tried to play small against a bigger team. They wound up giving up 50 points in the paint and getting beat up on the inside by Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. And look, the Jazz, they're bigs. They're very good. There are a lot of teams in the NBA that can roll those types of bigs out there at you. And if the Pacers can't find a way to make them pay for it defensively, they're going to have to go with more conventional lineups. Finally, I don't like what I'm seeing from the Lakers. And we're going to get into this later on the podcast with Lee Jenkins, who has, I think, some strong opinions on what we're seeing right now in Los Angeles. But this is kind of as bad, if not worse, than you might have expected coming into the season. I mean, the pessimists, early on, it seems like they were right about the Lakers. I mean, they lost to Minnesota, Sacramento, and Dallas to open the season. None of those teams are expected to be conference contenders in the Western Conference, and only Dallas figures to be in the mix for one of those final playoff spots. Kobe, he leads the team in scoring, he leads the team in attempts, but he is 11th on the team in field goal percentage and is shooting right around 20% from three-point range. I watched a lot of the Dallas game, and what I took away from the Mavericks game was Kobe just pressing, forcing bad shots, and really not seeing much, if any, accountability from Byron Scott on the sideline. And look, I know Byron Scott's got a very close relationship with Kobe. You don't want to get too tight-reined on Kobe. You want to let him try to work some of this stuff out, but you can't have him chucking up 17, 18 shots per game, not looking to pass. Saw an interesting stat as related to Kobe's passing. He's averaging almost as many field goal attempts as he is passes. Not assists, passes. And that's something I know that needs to change going forward. If the Lakers hope to have any chance of salvaging something with this season, because we're only in week two, people. And if the Lakers are going to play like this, it is going to be a really long season in Los Angeles. And it's not a season I think that Byron Scott can possibly survive. It is just really, really ugly on that Lakers sideline. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, one of the best low post players in the NBA, Al Jefferson from the Charlotte Hornets, is going to join us to talk about what he does and what makes him such a great low post player. We'll do that next. The NBA is back, and this week packs in some great matchups. Clippers Warriors, Thunder Bulls, and on Sunday, the Lakers versus the Knicks. Find your NBA, NFL, or even concert tickets on the SeatGeek app and use my code OPENFLOOR to get a $20 rebate. Here's how it works. You download the SeatGeek app on your iPhone or Android. It's free and takes less than a minute to download. Then you search for your event, find the deal you want, enter our code OPENFLOOR, and when you complete your purchase, SeatGeek will send you a $20 check to your house. It's that easy. Even if you pick a seat that's less than $20, they'll still send you a full check. That means SeatGeek is paying you to use their service. SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers online and shows you the best deal automatically. They also have this cool feature called Deal Score. It ranks every ticket on the market with a value score and plots the best deals on a color-coded map of the venue. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. You can store your credit card, and once you find a ticket you want to buy, you can make the purchase with two quick taps of your phone. So, to redeem your promo code and get your $20 check, download the free SeatGeek app today, enter promo code OPENFLOOR in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. If you want to go see the NBA, the NFL, or the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app and enter our promo code OPENFLOOR to save $20. He's Al Jefferson, Hornets power forward. He joins me here on the podcast. Al, any list of the best post players in the league always has you on it. When you were coming up, I'm curious, who was the best post player you ever saw?
Hakeem Olajuwon.
What'd you like about him?
He was kind of like, first of all, he wasn't as tall as most centers that he went against. And he had guard skills. You know, he was a type of guy that could put the ball on the floor. He could shoot threes, even though he didn't shoot many of them. But the ones I've seen him took, he made. And his back to the basket game was amazing. You know, his footwork was amazing. And Shaq was another one I loved to watch because he just used to overpower people. And he also was quick for his size and had footwork also. So those were my two favorite guys that I used to love watching growing up in the 90s. You got a chance to experience them playing.
When was the first time you did the Dream Shake?
I'm going to be honest with you, man. I don't even know because I never thought I was good enough to do that because I couldn't do it as well as he did it, you know. And then all of a sudden, like in the last maybe 5 years, I found myself doing it, even though I don't do it on a consistent level, but I found myself doing it when I had to. So,
what was the first move that you ever copied?
I have to say the first move I ever copied was the jump hook. Just know something simple as that. And then I'm always taught to do it, you know, have a go-to move and a counter move. So the jump hook and the drop step was part of my two favorite moves to do. And I have to say them were the ones I copied.
Was there someone you watched doing those moves? Was it Akeem? Was it somebody else that you sort of watched them do it and then you kind of added it to your game?
Yeah, it was like Akeem, like I said, watching them guys growing up and playing against the older guys at the park, you know, in my neighborhood, you know, and them guys who, you know, used to do some of the same similar stuff, you know. And then, you know, when you're playing against the older guys, I was the type of guy, if I played against somebody and they beat me and they did it better than me, I stole from them. Instead of getting mad and jealous, I just, you know, copycat it, you know, and kind of put my own little twist onto it. So,
isn't that what all great players do, though? I mean, all great players just borrow the great moves from the guys before them, right?
Yeah, I think that would make them great because the great guys before them, probably did the same thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with learning from a guy. You know, I learn something from Tim Duncan every time I play against him.
What's the most recent thing you learned from Tim Duncan?
What I learned from Tim Duncan now, you really can't teach. It's just that, you know, the older he got, the more smarter he got, in my opinion. You know, but in my earlier days, you know, I used to learn, like, a lot of his baseline moves, like his ball fake, how he used to keep the defense guessing, you know, his short roll game, like in the pick and roll, he do a little short roll, you know, how he able to pass and see the court and also take his shot when it's there. You know, that's some of the stuff that I picked up from him along my career. But now the things he do is just, like, it makes up with the youth he don't have. Like, of course, he's not as young as he used to be, but he's still the most smartest guy that I ever played against, even now.
Is there somebody in the NBA with a move that even now you look at them and say, that's the move I want to add to what I got?
Not far as on the block, no. Because the one thing that everybody probably have that I don't have is a left hand. I never used my left hand ever in my career. You know, never been able to finish around the basket with my left hand like most guys are. But these days, but the guys that I pick up on now, I wish I could add into my game, like the Chris Bosh, the guys who play more on on the 15, 17 foot range. Them guys, you know, because the games have changed so much. But, you know, the way them guys are able to, you know, put the ball on the floor and make moves and off the dribble and make passes, you know, that's some of the stuff that, you know, I wish I could add to my game. But at the end of the day, I'm a big believer in things ain't broke, don't fix it, you know?
Yeah, but think about if you had a left hand, Al, you'd be a Hall of Famer right now.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, but I said people ain't stopped the right hand yet, so at least we trying to worry about that left hand. Right now, at this stage of my career, this is my 12th year, man. If I ain't had it this long, I might not need it.
Tell me something that Kevin McHale taught you about being a post player.
Well, he was the one that, him and Dave Wolf, my coach I had in Boston, my assistant coach I had in Boston, and Kevin McHale was the one who really just elevated my post game up with the footwork. And, the facing up, the pivot game, you know, able to just, you know, read the defense and if the defense take this away, go to your counter move. And, you know, working with Kevin McHale was a great experience from 2 years I was there with him. Because he, you know, not only a great coach, but he, you know, he played the game in the post and was one of the best at it.
Kevin McHale ever put a move on you?
Nah, I think his playing days at that time was a little bit old, Will, but he sure used to go out there and just work with me.
That up and under move still works sometimes.
Oh, yeah, it still works. Trust me, I know.
I'm curious what goes through your mind, Al, when you make a catch, you know, in the post. What's the process for you? You make that catch, are you feeling what the defender's doing? Do you already know what you want to do? Just tell me what you think about when you first make that catch.
Well, it's all about reading the defense, too, because, you know, these days, it's very rare that I'm going one-on-one. You know, So I have to read the defense and see what kind of defensive scheme they're coming with me. And then I got to also see how the defender is playing me, you know, before I make my move. So I never go into my move knowing what I'm trying to do. You know, knowing what I'm going to do, I always have to read it, you know. And that's just because teams double team me, and they double team me from different ways. You got some come off the cutters. You got some come from the baseline, you know. So you just got to, sometimes you got to just sit and wait and watch what they're doing before, you know, you make a move because you don't want to cause no turnovers or whatever.
Who's the best post defender that's ever defended you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I have to say one of the ones that stand out to me right now, you know, over the years I've been in the league, I remember my first 3 or 4 years, my first 2 or 3 years, I could not score on Jermaine O'Neal. You know, I literally could not score on him at all. You know, it was frustrating. You know, over the years, of course, I got better at it, but he was pretty tough. Brandon Haywood was another guy that I used to hate playing against in my younger years because he was so, you know, long, a little athletic and had him long arms and stuff. But, you know, Kendrick Perkins, you know, me and him came in together. I came in 1 year after him. He's one of the guys that know my moves and know my game because me and him was together so much in our younger years. And, you know, he kind of established his defensive game around the same time I established my offensive game. So we kind of know each other. So he's one of the guys right now, if I play against, I got to really be thinking and really be on my toes.
Is it kind of a chess match out when you're going up against a guy that you go up against a lot or who is a former teammate because they might have, you know, kind of be able to guess what you're going to do and give themselves an advantage?
Yeah, it's a chess match, but, you know, that was all about getting better and expanding your game, you know. And, you know, in Perk, I surprise him a lot of the time with things I may do different then. Because me and him ain't played together in probably like 9 years now. You know, that's how long it's been. You know, when I got traded from Boston. So, man, he's been, you know, on the West Coast. So we only play each other maybe like twice a year now. So, you know, so that helped to my advantage. But he's just a smart defender. And when you become a smart defender like he is, you know, he'd pretty much be prepared and ready for anything.
You know, you mentioned Dave Wohl, had a chance to work with him. He's a great big man coach, an underrated big man coach, I think. Obviously,
yes.
Kevin McHale, obviously it speaks for itself. You work now for Michael Jordan, the owner down there, who not a power post player like you, but still, when people remember, one of the best post players at his position, the game is. Has there been anything you've been able to learn from him about playing that particular style?
The one thing about MJ, the things that he always gave me advice on the blog is about just, you know, reading the defense. Because sometimes I find myself thinking too much on the offense there because, you know, the double team be coming sometimes. Sometimes they act like they come and sometimes they don't come at all. And he, you know, always tell me, you know, just to, you know, how to read the defense and when to be able to go and to understand, you know, when you can't go, when you got to make the pass for your teammates and when you be able to go and attack. You know, so, and I know he, you know, understand the game from that area. And, like you said, he posts up a lot and probably one of the best post up players around, you know. But, you know, that's one of the things that he always taught, because he could see me a lot of time out there thinking and trying to worry about where the defense is coming from.
He still got game?
Yeah, he still got game. I mean, he still got game, man. I ain't watched him play in a minute, but you just look in his eyes and tell him when he step on that court, there's something will come out of him, man.
Who was the last Hornets player that Michael Jordan busted up?
I think it might have been before I got here, man. I don't know. I know he used to play against a lot of the guys before I got here, but I haven't seen him with my eyes since I've been here, though.
Are you the type of guy, Al, that do you care if you're playing power forward or center? We saw this offseason, LaMarcus Aldridge was pretty emphatic that he wanted to go to a team where he was playing power forward. What's your position on those two positions?
I mean, when I first got in the league, the power forward and the center was pretty much the same position. You know, when I first got in the league, I was a power forward, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, now, I mean, it's a big difference between the center and the power forward, you know, in my opinion. because the power forward is more around the three-point line. Got to be very skilled with the ball. So me, yes, it do matter. I want to be a center because, of course, my game is not, shooting threes and, being very skilled and dribbling with the ball like most of these guys are, like a Blake Griffin and guys like that. So, yeah, it do matter to me. I'd rather be, down there on the block.
I saw you say recently that you've picked up some defensive things from, post-defense, interior defense from working with Steve Clifford over the last couple of years. Steve's defensive reputation obviously speaks for itself. Can you just tell me something you've learned from him in terms of the defensive side of playing the position?
Well, defense is, since I got here, coach is the only, maybe because I wasn't listening in my prior years or whatever, but he made defense easier for me, like far as just understanding the help defense and being early on your help, he really helped me being a better team defensive guy. And one of the reasons why I lost a lot of weight this summer was to be able to defend the big guys around the three-point, like the Chris Boshes and everybody else who love to shoot three, and I want to be able to defend them guys around the three-point line. Two things he told me when he first met me, that for us to be a great team, I'm gonna have to be a better defensive player, and we're going to be a great team defensive, a great team defensive team. So that was the first thing he told me when I got here. For the last 2 years we've been top 10 in defense. And that's one of the things that I want. We want to establish. Being a Hornet. We're gonna be a great defensive team.
Was it hard last year? 2 years ago, you guys were this team on the rise. You get to the playoffs, a lot of expectations. Was it hard to watch everything kind of, take that step back? And from your perspective, why did you guys take the step back?
It's a lot of different reasons why you could say we took that step back, but it was tough. It was tough. It was disappointing. But, you understand in this league that, just because you have a great year 1 year, doesn't mean you're going to be one of them elite teams. You got to continue to work hard and continue to get better as a team. And I just think that along with injuries, and we can say a lot of different things. We had a lot of injuries last year. We had a tough schedule last year. You can say whatever you want to say, but it's no excuse. It just wasn't a good year. And, but the good thing about this team, this league, that we have another chance now this year. We're a better team, and even though we got an 0-3 to start, we could have easily been 2-1, and it's still early, and we got to just, turn this thing around and play the way we know we can play.
Steve said before the start of the season, he said it several times, that he would like to see the offense not have to be so reliant on you all the time. I know you said it's early, but do you see signs of changes of how you guys are trying to play offensively?
Oh, yeah. He had a good talk with me in the offseason, like how we were trying to do things with the offense that's going to better everybody, including myself and everybody on the team. So I liked the different zone that we are, the things that we are doing on the offensive end, because, everybody when they come play, they know, okay, you got to take our post stuff away, And now it's more options than that. I'm getting anywhere from 12 to 15 shots without no plays hardly called for, and I'm still getting them on the block. And they just, how well the ball is moving and being small and be able to move and, lost his weight and be able to move and set random pick and rolls and, keep the defense on their toes, keep the ball moving from side to side. I just think that's opened up more shots for everybody.
Can I try your diet? I've got to get down like 10 or 15 pounds. What do you got for me, Al?
No sweets.
Crap. Halloween,
no
it's over.
No dairy.
All right, starting now. Starting right now. The last thing I want to ask you, Al, is you're 30 years old, be 31 at this time next season, contract type of year for you. Do you think about now more than before your basketball mortality, about getting, that chance to get that ring before your career is over, more than you used to?
Oh, yeah. the more and more time go by, the more and more you think about it, man. And you know, and but you know, it's all right here, right now. You know, you got to do the little things that like teams do to become that championship and to make that championship run. You know, look at Golden State. You know, you look at them and what they did last year. You know, you got to just get the right group of guys together, and everybody got to be on the same page. You know, everybody got to hold each other accountable. So, and I think if you do that, you have a great chance.
Do you feel good?
You know, and I think about it all the time.
Do you feel good physically? Because you mentioned, I mean, you are only 30, but you're one of the last high school guys that came into the NBA. Sometimes later on in their careers, guys, you mentioned Jermaine, Kobe, you know, that all those miles from playing NBA games wears them down. How do you feel physically at this point of your career?
I feel great. I mean, the difference between me and them guys, them guys have been deep in the playoffs every year pretty much in their career. You know, I have, unfortunately for me, I haven't been deep in the playoffs in my early years, you know. So, you know, yes, I got a lot of years on me, but I don't have as many miles as them guys did. But they was playing into, you know, June every year of their career, you know, especially Kobe, you know, KG, them guys, you know. But far as me, that was, like I said, another reason why I lost, you know, lose this weight, you know, because I noticed when Tim Duncan got older, he started losing weight and got better. Like, to me, that last championship run they went on, you know, Tim was looking like he was 32, you know, 31, 32 instead of 37, 38, you know. And I know that was a big part about how he was dieting and the weight he lost. So, you know, that was enough for me right there to, you know, once again, I learned something from him, you know. I mean, even at 30, going on 31, 12 years in, I think I still got a lot of high-level years left in me.
Well, Al, you're a heck of a lot of fun to watch play in the post. Might be the most entertaining low-post player in the NBA today. Really appreciate the time for you jumping on the podcast. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much, man.
I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Lakers are in total disarray right now. We're going to check in with Lee Jenkins, our LA-based senior writer, and talk to Lee about what can be done, if anything, to turn this Lakers season around. Sports fans have never had more options than they do now. And that includes a reinvention of fantasy sports. You've probably heard of FanDuel, and if you wanted to try it out on basketball, football, hockey, or baseball, use my code OPENFLOOR at FanDuel.com for up to $200 in bonus cash. Here's what FanDuel is all about. It's daily fantasy sports where you can win cash and there's no waiting for payment. Winners get paid the same night of their victory. There's no long drafts, and you pick your team in minutes with a salary cap format. There are thousands of open leagues every day of the 15-16 NBA season. There's no season-long commitment, and league entries start at just $1. Over 1 million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Now it's your turn. If you love watching games, FanDuel ups the ante and adds a whole new dimension to the fan experience. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the code OPENFLOOR, and sign up now. There's a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code OPENFLOOR today, so don't get left out. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Try it out today. ESPN dropped a bombshell on the sports media landscape by dissolving Grantland. Last week, Maggie Gray invited SI Media columnist Richard Deitch onto her podcast, The Gray Area, to break down the motivations and implications of this move. That's The Gray Area with Maggie Gray. Search for it on iTunes, Stitcher, or visit si.com/podcasts. Welcome back inside our lovely podcast studios here on the Sports Illustrated building in Midtown Manhattan. As you know, we're very guest-friendly here on the Open Floor podcast. I want to bring in one of my guys who I expect to be a favorite guest whenever he has time to pop on. He's a busy guy, Lee Jenkins, SI senior NBA writer. What's up, Lee?
Thanks, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm feeling bad for you, though, because
why?
In New York, I'm used to bad basketball. Like, it's been ingrained in me over the last 13 years that if I go to Knicks and Nets games, my expectations need to be in the toilet. Like, you, though, right, you have had some great experiences covering the Lakers, you know, as recently as like 4 years ago. Now, yeah. I don't know what the Lakers are right now, Lee, but, you know, they we knew they might be bad, but watching them play against Dallas, And frankly, against Sacramento as well, they played some bottom feeders to open the season. Minnesota, watching them play early in the season, they could be like maybe historically bad this year.
Yeah, they're brutal, and they're also boring, Chris. I mean, and that's, you know, going into this season, a lot of people said, well, they'll be intriguing. It's Kobe. It could be Kobe Bryant's last year. You know, I don't really find that story very intriguing. I find it kind of depressing. It's just sort of the question of, is he going to stay upright? You know, how much heat is he going to take for, you know, launching too many shots? I don't really see a whole lot of intrigue with this team beyond the same intrigue they've had for the last couple of years, which is, will they keep that pick or not? Or will they have to send it to Philadelphia? And I mean, watching, you know, Byron Scott was really pretty good with Chris Paul and Kyrie Irving, the other rookie point guards he had. But so far, they just haven't seemed to be able to get D'Angelo Russell with any kind of momentum. And I think that was the one thing the Lakers had to look forward to, was for the first time they'd have, you know, one of those exciting young point guards to follow. And he hasn't necessarily delivered either in the early going.
You know, I watch Kobe, and it's like watching a guy just trying to will his way back to like 2007. Like, he's out there and he's just gunning. I mean, it's not like he's missing open shots. And you say, well, Kobe gets his legs under him. He gets his sharpness back after missing a couple of years. Maybe we'll see the old Kobe. Like, he's going like 1-on-2 sometimes with an extra defender behind him. And Lee, there's no accountability there, it seems like. I mean, Byron Scott.
No, it's total enablement.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Byron is just letting him do what he wants to do, right?
They've totally enabled him. And I think that was, you know, when they hired Byron, I think part of the rationale there was, you know, you're hiring somebody who has his respect, who should be able to kind of talk to him and steer him through this at the end of this career in LA, and kind of without maybe making him accountable in the traditional way, at least sort of show him that what's best for him is what's best for the organization. And the reality is, it feels as though he's just been completely enabled again. You know, it's another coach who doesn't seem like he can, you know, really give him the discipline and direction that at this point he needs. He needs to cede the floor to those young guys. And what's weird about it, Chris, is when you talk to him, he says all the right things. I think he believes it. And then when he gets on the floor, you know, he's possessed. He can't stop. And I think he feels, I mean, he looks so desperate. He looks like a guy who feels as if he can kind of shoot his way out of this, because that's the way he's done everything in his career. And clearly it's not working, and it's to the detriment of young players who really need these reps and this time to start to build something for when he's gone.
Yeah, when I first saw the Byron Scott hire, and remember, they hired him, it seemed like, after they looked at everybody else. Like, he was a mid to late summer hire, which you rarely see in the NBA, and you certainly don't see that often with glamour teams like the Lakers. I looked at it as like the Lakers acknowledging that they were probably going to suck for the last, you know, 2 to 3 years, whatever it would be, of Kobe's career. So to keep him from, you know, mouthing off or from, you know, causing more disruptions, let's hire one of his good friends. And that's what Byron's,
right?
I thought that was Byron's main selling point when he was interviewing for that job. Not his coaching credentials, though he had some success, obviously, in New Orleans, less so in Cleveland. But because of his coaching, because of who he was to Kobe Bryant, that's what made him the right fit at the right time.
Which is such flawed reasoning. I mean, because at this point, Kobe Bryant isn't significant to the future of the Lakers. I mean, to me, the guy they needed to hire was a talent developer, somebody who could come in and steer young players and help them get better, regardless of the wins. I mean, you can make an argument that the wins are sort of opposite of what they're actually looking for at this point, given their situation with the draft pick. But Kobe just shouldn't be high on their priority list anymore. And I think that in some ways, I was at that Byron Scott introductory press conference. It was the Lakers kind of living in the past again. Sort of, it was a nostalgic pick. It's like they had, you know, they trotted all the old Lakers out there for the press conference. It felt like one of those college football press conferences where they bring the old linebacker back to coach the team. And how often do those moves really work out? It seems like they went away from what everybody else in the NBA was doing again. They've done it schematically. They've done it now with their coaching hire. They've done it relying on an older player. Like, you know, and the Lakers just haven't had somebody who's been able to control and corral Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, they lose to Dallas. They lose to Minnesota. They lose to Sacramento. Two of those three teams are definitely not playoff teams. Dallas is going to be right there on the fringe. If you're losing to these three teams and you're the Lakers, it's hard to imagine how they're going to perform against the upper echelon teams in an incredibly deep and talented Western Conference. Do you think, is it possible? I mean, it's a small sample size. I don't want to completely overreact to 1 week, but if this keeps going, I don't see how Byron can retain this job. The Lakers have made in-season coaching moves before, very recently, going back to Mike Brown. Can you see Byron Scott being let go at some point this season?
But what's the incentive for that, Chris? I mean, the Mike Brown situation was so different because that was a team with huge expectations. And I just don't know necessarily what you gain. I mean, I guess the reason I would consider the change, I suppose, is if you see those young players, if it just becomes a toxic atmosphere and you see their development being halted, being stagnated. But I mean, and I know this gets into the whole tanking conversation, but to me, the stakes for the Lakers and tanking are totally different than the stakes for other teams, where it's a difference between pick 7 and pick 4, pick 5 and pick 3. I mean, this is, are they going to keep their pick or not? And I'm looking at it right now. You look at the West, and obviously, as far as, I mean, the with the competition in the West, there is a real opportunity for them to keep that pick. And if they made a change and they got in a better coach,
yeah.
What's the incentive there? I mean, is the incentive to finish, 12th instead of 14th? I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Would you do it just to kind of spare the young players this potentially toxic experience?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you can be just biblically bad in a season for the Lakers in Kobe Bryant's quote last season with this team. I don't know if Kobe will tolerate it. I mean, how far would his affection for Byron Scott really go?
Right.
I mean, is he willing to accept a team that, you know, to be honest, you mentioned Rick Carlisle, and Rick Carlisle is such a great coach, and he has such good game plans every single night. He's propping that team up in some ways because, I mean, they're rolling like Zaza Pachulia out there at the 5 spot to replace Tyson Chandler. Dirk's a year older. I mean, I give Rick Carlisle a ton of credit as being one of the better coaches in the NBA. I think this Laker team, they might not be 2-1 or 3-0, but they might have been able to pull off a win, beating a Minnesota or a Sacramento if their game plans have been a little bit better. And you know Kobe as well as anybody that works over here. This guy is a cerebral guy. He knows when his game plan is flawed. So I wonder if Kobe starts to, whisper upstairs and say, look, this isn't working out. We've got to make a change. Let's try to do something different and move on from this.
But this is kind of the way and maybe he is cerebral enough to know that the way he likes to play is no longer the best way to play or the best way to win. But I wonder about that, Chris, because the way he's playing right now and Byron's, allowing him to essentially do what in theory he likes to do. But what he likes to do runs contrary to what's working in the modern NBA. So I don't know if Kobe's, if he's going to get to that point where he sees that what he wants to do, what Byron wants and allows him to do is not the thing to do. And that might be a process that unfolds here in the next month or so. But, his frustration is going to boil over. I mean, he's shown way more patience in the past couple years than he did, I think, a little bit earlier in his career. But this team is going to test his patience, and it also may test kind of the way he looks at basketball, because the way he wants to play clearly isn't working.
Yeah, and looking forward with that, Byron, whatever happens this season, I can't see him coming back next year. If there's a changing of the guard with Kobe going, I think Byron goes along with him. Do you look at the Lakers, going into next year, are they still a marquee job? Because I've maintained that it's probably going to be kind of a coaching free-for-all in trying to get that Laker job, because you got Tom Thibodeau out there, you got Scott Brooks still out there. Rick Carlisle, in theory, is still going to be available. Last year of his contract, though, they've discussed a contract extension down there with him in Dallas. Do you still see the Lakers as being a marquee coaching job?
Yeah, I do, Chris. I mean, I suppose you can't be a marquee job unless you have the talent coming back. I mean, it's not a marquee job as far as the ability to win right away. But as far as a long-term, and it's unusual. They're rarely in this situation where they're going to have to commit to a long-term rebuilding project and get a coach who, maybe isn't the coach who wins a title for you, but is the coach who can, you know, who can make you respectable, who can develop young guys. And so I still feel like it is a marquee job because I still think that they are the kind of team that's going to get in the room for all these free agents. And I know that next summer isn't going to be, I mean, that's going to probably be another disappointing summer for the Lakers. But if they can kind of get these young guys to build this core, get a coach who can do that, I still think that when the playing field is even for them, they have the best shot at any free agent. I still think that's their advantage. Now, they can't just expect to land a free agent with nothing to sell. But as long as what they have to sell is kind of in the ballpark, I think that's where they're able to flex their muscle. And that's why I think it is still a marquee spot.
All right, let me ask you about the Clippers. Let's get some positivity here on the NBA podcast. You know, they're playing extremely well, 3-0 to start the season. This was a team that was like one decision by DeAndre Jordan away from maybe having to really rebuild, because I felt there could have been a domino effect if DeAndre signed with Dallas, with Chris Paul saying, well, I want to get out of here, with Blake Griffin thinking, well, maybe it's time for me to get out of here. Now, not only they got Jordan, but you got Paul Pierce on that roster, Lance Stephenson, you know, still early in the process with these guys. But when you watch the Clippers play, how much better, if at all, do you see them as being from last year?
I mean, they're deeper. Their bench was a mess last year. Made some good moves to fortify that bench. I think he took probably some risks as far as, you know, chemistry and locker room and all those things. Because a lot of egos on that team, reputations. But I think that he felt like he had to probably take those shots in order to fortify that bench, in order to make a leap in the West, which is not an easy thing to do. And arguably they've done it. I mean, it's too early, but so far, I mean, I looked at them in Houston as two teams that made some changes that could go either way. And I thought one of those teams would probably slip and one would surge. One might take a leap. Again, way too early to draw any big conclusions. But I think we can say that Houston's going to take the longer time to adapt, whereas the Clippers seem like they're just rolling right ahead. So, you know, the question for me is, have they joined that power three in the West? Is it now Golden State, Oklahoma City, the Spurs, and the Clippers? And I think they have, Chris. I think that they are now deep enough. When you look last year at how good that starting five was, how good those three were together, all they needed to do was have an adequate bench, and I think they've done that.
I love Paul Pierce in that lineup, Lee. I really do. I mean, I've known Pierce, obviously, for a long time in Boston, but saw him play like everybody else in Washington. I don't know if there was a stat last year for number of three-point attempts where nobody's within 10 feet of you that you miss, but Matt Barnes was pretty high on the list of those shots. Yep. He had a lot of wide-open looks that he just missed. Pierce isn't going to miss those. I mean, he may have some flaws to his game at this point. Who knows how many threes he can really defend at this point. But you give him a wide-open look, Lee, and he's still going to make that better than 50% of the time.
Well, and he's especially going to make it when it counts. I mean, he's going to make in money time. And I think you put a guy like that on your team, you know, I don't know if they would have lost to the Rockets, you know, if they would have blown that game five if Paul Pierce were on the floor.
I'd
way rather. I'd take my chances with him. Even his presence and just being there. I think the Clippers, I mean, that can't happen again. They've just had too many of those how did they do that playoff collapses. And I think you put a guy like that on a team, and he helps you avoid some of those kind of meltdowns that the Clippers, let's be honest, have been prone to. And I don't know why that is. You know, I wouldn't think Chris Paul would be a guy who'd allow that sort of thing to happen either. But this kind of gives him an extra layer. And the other part of them is just Blake Griffin. And I mean, and how good he is. I mean, he is, it's like every year it feels like he's getting better and better, and we're getting farther and farther from those times when he was, you know, seen as kind of just a highlight machine. I mean, he is now, I don't know where you'd put him, Chris. Is he a top three player in the NBA? For sure, top five. And so you put him and Chris Paul together, plus DeAndre, plus the bench. It's really amazing to me that Jordan even considered leaving this team for Dallas, for what they have there. I mean, I know everybody was shocked at the storyline when he went back. To me, the bigger surprise is that he ever thought of leaving in the first place.
Yeah, everyone thinks they can be like Hakeem Olajuwon, but I'm glad he, you know, for his own personal benefit, I think his future is much brighter being like that. You know what else Pierce does, though, too?
Seeing your own limitations. Yeah. In this case, seeing your own limitations was the smarter move rather than you know, I'm going to be the man. I can do everything. It's like these guys sometimes have to see, can you do it all, or do you kind of stay in your lane? I know that's a tough thing to see sometimes.
You know what else is I think Pierce they'll benefit from Pierce in that. If there was anything that shed light on during this whole free agency process was that there was clearly some friction in that Clipper locker room. I don't know whether it was, was Blake involved? Was it just Chris and DeAndre? Something was going on there last year that caused some problems and made DeAndre want to leave in the first place. It's not unusual to have this kind of mean girls effect in a locker room where cliques sort of form and, guys don't talk about stuff. Pierce being there, like if Pierce sees some kind of rift forming, like he's not going to let that go. It's not going to fester and become something more than it already is. He's going to make sure this is confronted head on, and he's going to be that kind of coach in the locker room that Doc Rivers needs with that group. I think that's going to be incredibly vital to maintain good chemistry throughout the course of a season.
Yeah, and I don't think their chemistry will ever be, quite what everybody would dream of. I mean, this is part of their identity, is that you have Blake and DeAndre. They're very good friends. They've been there since the beginning. And Chris is kind of on the other side. And I think he sort of leads through friction. And I don't think he is necessarily going to change that approach. If he's making some guys feel a little bit uncomfortable, I think that's his way. I think that's his style. And it's part of what makes him great and effective, even though I'm sure it's part of what makes him, sometimes difficult to play with. I don't necessarily know that the Clippers want to take that away from him, because sometimes in the past, I think those guys have needed that little nudge. And I think part of what happened with DeAndre, I mean, I would hope, would be realizing that that's good for him, that having Chris Paul there, kind of bringing that edge to that whole team has been what's made them a contender really in the first place. And I know it's probably not fun every day to have Chris kind of looking at you like that and barking at you like that. But Chris Paul has accelerated the development of those two guys. I just don't know that if he's not there and they sort of have a point guard who's just, kind of coddling them along, I don't know that either one is at the level they're at.
And let me ask you one question about the team north of you up in Golden State, 3-0 as well in the season. Look, New Orleans is not a great defensive team right now anyway, but I'll tell you what, they're coached by Alvin Gentry. And if anyone has any idea of the best ways to at least get Steph Curry out of his flow, I would assume it would be Alvin Gentry. I mean, he's not a great defensive coach.
Why do you say that, though, Chris?
Because he knows the tendencies.
Why do you say that? When did Alvin become anointed that way?
No, he's not. I'm just curious. I don't think he's a great defensive coach at all. I'm just saying because he was there last year and because he was around this particular team that he would have some idea of the things that might make Steph Curry uncomfortable.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And look, whether it's, blitzing or, schematically, he would know maybe have an advantage against that particular team. But Curry's right. Went for, 93 points in the first two games that played against New Orleans, 118 points overall on this season. When you watch him play, I think he's got that kind of bleep you face on. I think he's kind of looked around and listened to people like Doc Rivers say, well, there was some luck involved by not playing the Clippers or the Spurs. He saw his peers in the offseason basically say, we think James Harden was the best player in basketball in that NBA PA award that they handed Harden. Right. I feel like he's got that kind of that little attitude there that, none of what I did last year, what this team did last year, was anything close to an aberration.
Yeah, I mean they seem like a very sensitive team. I mean, I read that Doc Rivers quote. I didn't find it in the least bit controversial. But look, this is what championship teams have to do. They have to find sort of this fuel, and if that's what it's going to be, if it was that passing comment from Doc Rivers or that Steph Curry didn't get enough love in the offseason, which I find very hard to believe. I thought he got a lot of acclaim for what he did.
His own boys didn't vote him for didn't give him that NBA
PA. I realize that. I kind of knew that. I had a feeling that vote was coming given what people said about Harden last year. But whatever. I mean, if that's what it's going to take, then that's great. I mean, they're going to have to look. As it goes on and they get better and better, they're going to have to look for that kind of motivation. And he has. He's come back. I mean, when I look at him, it looks like he's playing so loose. He's so free. And when he's like that, he's unstoppable. Because he's now at a point where I think his success has bred more and more and more confidence. I don't know how much of it's the motivation from those slights, real or perceived. But I think it's a guy who's just, he's shooting free. He's shooting with confidence. And, you know, when you talk to Curry about his shot, so much of it is confidence. It's amazing a guy like that would ever lack for confidence. But I think he's just, he gets in these zen-like grooves, and he's been in it now for going on a year, and it just doesn't look like it's going to stop. And now you can tell that he's just keeps finding different ways to leverage his shot into opportunities for his teammates, into drives, passes. That shot, the fear it puts in other teams, opens up so much for Golden State, and it feels like with every game he's finding new ways to exploit it.
Yeah, I'd just like to clarify, I do not believe Alvin Gentry is an elite defensive coach. I want that on the record.
No, you know what it is, though, Chris? I'm just curious about Gentry in just in general, and how – because I remember when he was with the Clippers, and now I know it's a long time ago, you know, there were some kind of questions about him and what his future would be as far as a head coach. He did really well in Phoenix, and when you look back at that team, it was D'Antoni's team, but when you look at that 2010 conference finals team, it wasn't an overly talented team, and they went so far in the playoffs. Then he goes to Golden State, and it seemed like what happened there, it's hard to ever know who deserves the credit staff-wise for what they were doing, but he became just a really hot candidate, and I wonder about that sometimes. You know, is he going to have the same kind of effect on New Orleans as somebody like Kerr had on Golden State? It seemed like there was a widespread assumption that New Orleans was going to take a really big jump in the West. And I don't know. I'm skeptical of that. I know they've had injuries. They always have injuries down there. But I'm curious to see what happens with that team. I think that they're one of the most interesting teams in the NBA this year because a lot was expected of the imprint that staff would put on that roster. And I don't know how possible it is.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Monty maybe overcoached offensively at times last year. I thought he called a lot of plays, you know, from the sideline. And I feel like you just let the, you know, kind of let this team loose a little bit and just let them run up and down. They're going to put up a lot of points, and they have put up a lot of points. The question is, yep, can they get stops defensively? I think, you know, you mentioned the importance of staff. I mean, I'm a big fan of Darren Erman, the assistant coach down there, who came over from Boston, who has been a sought-after defensive coordinator ever since he was booted out of Golden State kind of unceremoniously several years back. Toronto wanted him. Houston wanted him. Teams have been after this guy. I think now, you know, he had to play. They had to play Golden State twice in the first three games. I think once they get away from the Warriors a little bit, they'll be a better defensive team, and that team will take the, you know, 4-5-game jump this year going into next year.
Where do you see them, Chris? Do you see them as like a six seed in the West? Or I mean, I know penetrating that top six is going to be very difficult.
I think six is probably their ceiling. They might be able to, you know, jump, you know, be in the mix with Houston, which doesn't look that great. But I'll tell you what, it's only 0-3, but you got to start stringing some wins together early because you can't fall too far behind in this conference. Those games, you're going to look back towards the end of the season and say, damn, how did I not get that one win at the end of the at the start
of
the
year? I love how you've already got Houston like struggling for their life after a week.
Lee, I appreciate it, my friend. Looking forward to reading your stuff in the coming weeks in the magazine, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it, Chris.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Open Floor Podcast. You can find more great Sports Illustrated podcasts at si.com/podcasts, and please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher and SoundCloud. Make sure to tweet me at ChrisManixSI or my producer, Alan Kim, at AlanXKim, and use the hashtag OpenFloor to have your voice heard. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.